Down to Brass Tacks, good morning and welcome. 233-266-IVOB or 434-1790. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Yes, good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Man, not too bad. I can give you a little joke. This is a fact before going to the meet or what I want to talk to you about. There was a lady who had one son, and this is a real fact.
She had one what?
One son. She had no daughter, one son. So there was a mother and a son living together.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, the older she get, one day the son told her, I am bringing home my girlfriend, Sunder. Which will be the next Sunder. You hearing me clear?
I'm hearing you clearly, sir.
Yeah. So she walk around the district to her friends and said, well, I am getting down in age. So I am glad that my son bringing home the girlfriend so that she could help me do any little thing in the house when I am getting worse at my age. So the son did she prepare the house in the way a mother would do. And the son told her, he step in here and come back. He went to pick up was supposed to be his girlfriend, a fat fella, fat, gloomy-looking fella. Put him in the house, and the mother now saw uptight looking for the girl coming home, so she asked him, you ain't going to see your girlfriend? He said, yes, she did. Maybe the man he bring home. So this is nothing new. Whether you like man or you like woman, that's your business. Now, last week, Peter, I came on this. The last time you was here, I don't think you was on last week. You was on last week?
Yes. No. I was. Yeah. No, week before.
You could recall, I told you, taking a trade unionist into St. George is not so nice because the windfall issue leave a bad taste. And the older people in St. George by the Barbados Workers Union. And I said, as a result of that, Sir Grantley had formed another union to challenge the Barbados Workers Union. Could you recall the taxman calling, they said that I always come in misinforming people. That there's no way Sir Grantley Adams would have formed another union when he was a founding member of the Barbados Workers. You remember that call from the taxman? You remember that?
I don't remember the call, but anyhow, you made your point.
The point is, that last Sunday, you know that program with Gabby Scott? Where Gabby Scott was able to enlighten the public who listened to it. The name of the union, if I take this one right, was the name the Barbados Progressive Union of Workers that was formed by Grantley Adams after the issue with the windfall. Now, that is sufficient for that. It seems, Peter, you said you were not aware. You remember the days of the colonial days where adult suffrage was introduced that only people who had land I was at a certain age could have voted. You heard about that?
Mm-hmm.
The adult suffrage? Peter?
Yeah, I listened, sir.
Yeah. You know about the adult suffrage?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yes, I know about the adult suffrage. I'm listening. Go on.
What was the purpose of the adult suffrage?
So that everybody could vote.
Yeah. But you know, recently, don't care what you do, we are going around in a circle. You know that right now, through your station that you're working with, that only a certain people could talk about St. George by election. That is the mandate that is given out.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between the adult suffrage and you now allowing only certain people to talk? You can't talk about election in Barbados anymore on VOB. Where's Carter?
But sir, I didn't realize. I didn't. Sir, no, I don't know that is fair. I don't know what the decision was, because nothing has been communicated to me as a talk show host, but my understanding has always been that once you pass nomination day, as a broadcaster, we have to be conscious of not infringing the laws of the election broadcast principles that basically says that we have to give fair coverage to both sides.
As long as you pass nomination day.
So the program can continue. As I understand it, hold on a second, the program can continue as long as we are not speaking on behalf of one candidate versus the other. At the same time, however, if you want to discuss general issues, you can discuss those issues, but I don't know that you need to be worried.
All right, all I am asking you, if you say that...
Can you hold on a second? Sir, stick a pin. Dennis is going to clarify the issue.
Thank you, Peter. Two things. One, the directive from the station manager is that we do not allow campaigning on the air. So let me try to draw a line that I hope the caller and other listeners and callers would understand. Let's say, for example, former Minister of Finance Christopher Sinclair was running in St. George. If someone called and said, I think Christopher Sinclair was a bad Minister of Finance, that's a political comment. That's not canvassing. If the person goes on to say, but he was a good representative for St. Michael, Northwest, and I know he can do good for the people in St. George, because that is canvassing. That's where you draw the line between a political comment and canvassing. As the producer, that's where the line is drawn for me to follow. Now, I remember David saying on one occasion that he let somebody go too far because he knew he'd step over the line that he had drawn. There are times when one has to understand how the distinction is made. And more importantly, you mentioned the fact about nomination day. Once that goes, then the broadcast authority starts checking how much competing time you give to each person on the radio, and then it becomes an issue. And by the way, the stats man, as he's called, is on the line, who wants to make an intervention with what your caller said. Just clarifying that for you and the caller.
Yeah,
Pete.
Go ahead. Yeah. I'm listening. Let him come at the intervention.
Go ahead, Statsman. No, Statsman, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was sitting out today, right? But I heard him, as per usual, keep disinforming people, trying to want people, ask moderators questions, that was not dealing with. I remember specifically saying, that with the rainfall bonus, Sir Grant, he was blaming something. I don't remember exactly who he's blaming, but my point was that Sir Grantley Adams, as the leader of the BLP, the founder of the Barbados Labour Party, was opposed, diametrically opposed to the people, to Frank Walker, getting the people's money. He said, no, it's the people's money. They should get it. I've never said that he didn't win the farm union as he's supporting. I never said that, but that was never the issue. The issue was that I said to Grantley Adams, allowed went through the length and breadth of Barbados and said, it's the people's money. Let the people have it. And that's what exactly happened.
Look, Peter, I don't deal with untrue statements. He has to back in that corner. He said that I
don't
perform
the
people.
You always think you're right. I do not back. Don't talk with me.
Let me ask you, did Grantley Adams form another union?
That was never the issue. I never called the program on that day. That was not the issue. You just said it. You deal with me.
Is play back the program.
This man is coming to misinform the country.
I want to ask him to bring the information we need it from. Tell me that if he did not say that Grant Leonard would never form another unit, then he was a founding member of the Barbados Workers Union.
Go read
and bring proper information to this country.
Why don't you stop talking? Let me make the point.
Welcome back to
Down to Brass Tacks. I was having some technical challenges there. The screen froze for a minute, and I'm not sure what happened. Do we still have Dennis? Sorry, do we still have Alvin on the line?
Do we still have
Statsman and the other caller on the line?
I'm here. He's gone? Or
he's I ain't going away.
Just stop interrupting. You called earlier to Mr. Wickham, and you said to Mr. Wickham,
If we can have another caller then. Unfortunately, I think that we lost that conversation. Let's see if we can have another caller and say good morning and welcome. Hey, good morning, Dennis. And let me apologize for that slight break. I think we had a transmission issue on both sides, perhaps. I'm also hearing that there was some what the Trinidadians would refer to as bacchanal on the radio in my absence. It would seem as though the two gentlemen took advantage of my absence to moderate, to engage in what some of the WhatsAppers have referred to as a fish market brawl. I too enjoy a good fish market brawl from time to time. So sadly, I will have to wait and listen to the replay tonight and hear the brawl that ensued. So I'm assuming that the brawlers are no longer with us. Unfortunately, I would not be able to be part of that. So maybe they can recreate it. There's a couple of things though. I have one member of parliament reminding me that the former leaders that were referred to, Tom Adams and Bree St. John, both supported the Medical Termination of Pregnancies Act. And they also supported, of course, the freehold tenantries legislation, which is another matter altogether. And they would also have supported the Family Law Act. We have a lady from the Office of the Prime Minister has indicated that the situation at Eagle Hall is also of concern to them, and that they're looking into it with the greatest of efficiency to try to ensure that the indignity is not allowed to continue. And then another young WhatsApper, Shane, is telling me that people need to understand that there's a huge difference between the views of this generation and the one that has passed. Generally speaking, young people could care less about same-sex marriage, and they would think that it is foolishness to suspend Kimar Stewart for his charge, the offense for which he was charged. And people need to know that. I too am of the opinion that the young people have far different priorities, quite frankly. So I agree that this is the direction that we have to move in. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing? I'm great.
Right. Glad to hear that. I would not go and speak on saying that you, like most of all, speaking about on this program in recent times. But I respect your views, whatever they are. And at the end of the day, people who are criticizing, very often, they have more sin than having somebody from the opposite sex. I leave that at that. I like to speak on politics, lies, and agriculture. We hear now there's a lot of pumpkin on the market, and there's no need to import. So we will wait now and see how the Minister of Agriculture handled that, and how much would be imported during this glut. Something that I got to say to him again, he can become the best Minister of Agriculture or the worst ever Minister of Agriculture. Because we have a crisis now on our hands with COVID and all next to it. And I remember David Ellis lambasting me when I draw the scenario whereby F ships can come to the Barbados, and he do a number upon me, and then he apologized as a man. Anyhow, then bugger down. 2 or 3 weeks after, everything closed down. So I feel good to see that my words haven't went in vain, and if people were listening, or the big shots in agriculture have been listening, we wouldn't been as far back as we is now. But anyhow, be as it may, agriculture is something that was the bedrock of all big, strong economies in the world. And all ministers, prime ministers, have given agriculture a bad name. Only one that put laws on the statute book was Edward Wharton Barrow. I want to know why a minister of agriculture cannot call for more money, get all the plantations that government own, because government owned the most plantations in Barbados after the National Bank had lent so much money to all the different plantations. Government ended up owning the most plantations in Barbados. Why don't he get some tractors, get the land plowed, and we have enough people in Barbados to plant up all the land in Barbados with everything you can dream of. We don't have to import one carrot into Barbados. Carrots is one of the easiest crops to grow and have the less maintenance to grow. And we just import carrots. But you know what happened? There's people who benefit from importing the carrots. I can't see everything on the phone call. You know, it's not nice. This body was so, and the next body went, and all next to it. But the last point that I'm going to make is where water is concerned. I see it on this program for well over 25 years. Barbados is not a water-scarce country. It's the biggest lie was ever told to us after Christopher Columbus discovered the West Indies. We have springs, we have water going to the sea, millions of gallons every day, and with technology, we could divert water from going to the sea. You don't divert all, or keep the ecosystem around going, but we could divert water. The God sent him a pump. We could pump water anywhere in Barbados. All the ministers we have that dealt with water is a bunch of jokers. We are not a water-scarce country. It's the biggest lie we were ever told. Anyhow, thanks for listening. I want to be watching and see what the agriculture do. And let them know the water that's coming down from up by Border Hall and going past the White Junction there, where those new houses built, going right down all the soil coming off of the hill, where the people, the oil people, had a spill some years back. I know he know the area, because he's traveling. So I will see if they implement something whereby they will plant sour grass or any type of grass, mainly cuscus grass, to stop that mold topsoil from washing down. Have a good day, sir. I wish you well.
All right, sir. I just wanted to make a very quick comment to what you've said. You know, I'm not the best person to speak on agriculture. I think that my views on agriculture are well known over the years and not necessarily the most supportive. But suffice to say that I think that it will be easier to solve the crisis in the Middle East than it is to deal with this issue of why it is that we have all of this arable land in Barbados that is going to waste. We have all of these people who are unemployed that could work the land. We have a government that owns substantial quantities of arable land, and we cannot. We have to import carrots. My understanding over the years is that it has not been easy, and it is a problem that should have been solved by now, but unfortunately is not being solved. I understand the reasons, but the reasons are wrapped up in the whole reality of how we see ourselves as a people and the extent to which agriculture is unfortunately not high on our list of priorities. And then you talked about pumping water from one place to the other. Again, it sounds quite easy. I certainly wish that these things were as easy as this, but sadly, it becomes a bit more complicated. But your comments, sir, are well taken. We very much appreciate having you on the program and seeing what you feel about these issues. Don DeBrastax, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
I wish that these things were as easy as this, but sadly...
Go right ahead, sir. Don't listen to your radio, please.
Well taken. We very much appreciate having you on the program.
So you're listening to your radio. You need to not listen to your radio. All right. Let's say good morning and welcome to the next caller. Good morning and welcome to the next caller. Good morning and welcome. All right. I can hear the caller, and as I said, it seems as though somebody is there, but the person isn't coming through. So let's say good morning and welcome. You're on the air. 434-1790 is the number that you can call. Good morning. All right. I don't know if Dennis, we can have another caller. I say good morning and welcome. 434-1790.
Good morning, Vikram. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Pretty good. No, my question to you.
My question to you is, do you have anything that you need to say or can you give way to someone? All right. I think that we need to terminate this conversation. And let's say good morning and welcome to the next caller. And let's hope that this next caller has something slightly more illuminating to add to the conversation today. Good morning and welcome. Good morning and welcome. There's a caller. I know that good morning, sir.
Yeah, how are you keeping?
I'm good.
As you said, what called last week, man, I would like to know where we can get back in contact. You can ask somebody.
Sir, that unfortunately is not anything that I can.
Many other government, they empowered, you know, they could have certain other government were not getting any tax money, so now we just see like it happening the same way.
Uh-huh.
And I would like one thing to, I would like one thing to stop from bombarding with your station with all them food advertisements every minute, all them food advertisements all the time, man. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, sir. Thank you for calling. All right. Somebody's saying, good morning, Peter. Let me first of all say that I'm a Christian and I'm not in favor with same-sex unions. I will, however, say that as Christians, we have a fundamental flaw in our core principles that showed up our hypocrisies. In God's eyes, homosexuality is a sin. So is lying, cheating, stealing, greed, and all the other things you mentioned earlier. If I condemn you, I will not be able to reach you. And if I condemn you, I will have to condemn every other person I come into contact with on a daily basis, including myself. Peter, when I stop sinning, I'll throw a stone at your house. In the meantime, I'll continue to pray for us all. Have yourself a great day. And I would wish you, sir, the best of days to you, too. Good morning and welcome. All right. Good morning and welcome, sir. Please listen to the phone and not to your radio. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, morning.
Hey, morning, Mom. How are you doing?
Oh, not so bad this morning. How are you?
I'm great.
Okay. So I'm on the air now?
You are on the air, Mom. Please go right ahead. Welcome to the program. And she hangs up. Good morning to the next caller. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, Peter. Am I on the air?
You are on the air. Please go right ahead.
Oh, okay, then. Peter, I want to deal with the issue the last time that you were on the program when you were referring to the whole question of children in same-sex unions. That's not what I want to deal with. But in your attempt to represent the whole question of the well-being of children, you raised the issue of single-headed households in Barbados and the region. You didn't say the region, but that's the same all over the region.
Yeah.
And in your zeal, forgive the the description that was not correct. And in your zeal to describe how we should really look at well-being of children, you did what I call pathologizing single-sex homes. And
repeat that word. What's the word?
Pathologize. Where you link single-sex homes to dysfunction in the society. And
I did?
What I'm calling. Yes, you did. You one of the things that you do did was say, but look at all these children that are in things come out of single parent homes. We should look at that. They're the ones that are doing the frame, they're the ones that are doing that. And that's something that I found very, very problematic for me.
It's problematic. Mom, let me make it clear to you that if that's what you thought I did, I sincerely apologize for having misled you. Because that is the exact opposite of what I was attempting to do.
Okay.
Let me make it clear. And I think that by mentioning my conversation with the anthropologist, the professor that I love so dearly, in saying that she chastised me for writing in a speech to say that it was unfortunate that so many children in Barbados were born into single parent families. So I accept that is not correct. So if that is what I came across as saying, ma'am, that was not my intention. What I was trying to suggest is that we should not stand in judgment of anyone's parental arrangement, because the parental arrangement is not of their doing. Parents do their best with what they can. And I know some excellent well brought up children that have come out of single sex, single parent homes, where they had one mother and the mother raised several children and did an excellent job of it. So if that was what you thought I said, I sincerely apologize, ma'am, because that was not my intention.
But, and then it's not to me, it's to the nation, because the statistics speaks to the whole question that over 50% of all households are single parenting households. And in terms of you, I was surprised, because I know in terms of how you speak about social dysfunction and family forms and so on, you value family forms in all the ways that they come. So having clarified that that's not what you did, can we then just discuss one of the things right now in terms of the issue? And I think you speak to it over the years, the issues that really connect to dysfunction, to criminality and so on. I'm no expert. I'm an observer like all of us. But you take the rain over my sail, because I really wanted to tell you that, you know, that's not...
No, ma'am. You know, and I'm looking back at that report that I referred to last week, the report that I did in terms of looking at married and so on. And the reality is that more children are born out of wedlock than in, right?
Yeah.
It is a significant number. And so to suggest that there's anything odd or unusual, and I mean, I would even go back, ma'am, to reference to my own situation, in which I told you that I attended a primary school in which I was the only person in that school that had a mother and father that were married to one another in that class. And I thought that I was from a non-traditional family, because the tradition is all about what you experience. And I certainly, ma'am, over the years, I've been very clear in my mind that there is no dysfunction associated with a single parent family. So the point that I was trying to make is that anytime you assume that two parents of the same sex, one parent of a single sex parent, whatever arrangement, once you start to judge that and decide that that is associated with dysfunction, you're going to run into problems.
But Peter, we are on the same level now, and having been on the same level now, one of the things that I would like to probably explore is, why do we still continue to value this whole question of marriage as the ideal when our reality is not that? And where does that come from? And this here comes back to, I guess, all the things that you have discussed over the years in terms of how certain things are forced, not forced, we are taught, and subconsciously we internalize it and we value it in a way different to all the things that we have existing. And it's not only in family, but it is probably even in music, it's probably in education, you know, like, and one of the things that you started the program with was the whole question of CXC, and you wanted to look at the impact it has on the children. And one of the sad things that came out of that whole thing for me in terms of following it online is how people wanted to start to devalue CXC. I mean, Caribbean Examination Council as an examining board. And it's an indigenous body. I say indigenous, I mean, is we created it ourselves, we be in the region, even if it was the whole question that we was forced to, because Britain said, you know, like, I done with this foolishness and y'all do your own thing. But it's ours. And in it being ours, it has a flaw. But that's no reason for us to devalue it and to start to have conversations that they want a competing body and all of that kind of thing. Because similarly, there are certain things happening in Britain and other places with this COVID in terms of the examination bodies and so on running into challenges. So it's not unique to us. And one of the things that came out of the whole, because I read a couple of articles on it online, and one of the things that they were very concerned about is that they're saying that in times of disasters, whether it be a hurricane, a volcano, the disaster, natural or unnatural, children that graduate, people that graduate in that year, their qualifications always become very testy because people tend not to value that. And that's one of the long-term effects that we have it on our children. You graduate in 2020? I ain't so sure about this. So that's one of the long-term, and it's not only here, it's all over. So the larger point that I want to instill within this conversation and linking it back to the whole question of single sex, single family homes, is value what we have. Don't only see them as dysfunction, don't only see them as pathologizing and that kind of thing.
All right, Mom, I want to respond enthusiastically to both things that you said. Let me start with the CXC first. And I agree with you that this idea of ditching CXC is not something that needs to be entertained. The problem that I have with the way that the conversation has gone with CXC is that CXC, to me, seems to be resistant to democratization, right? To the best of my knowledge, Oxford and Cambridge never ditched us. You know, I have A-levels from Oxford and Cambridge and that old tradition. They never ditched us. We, however, decided that we wanted to go in the direction of a system that we had more control over and a system that was more relevant to our undertaking. And I think the example that was used to me in school was history, where if I'm to do an A-level Oxford and Cambridge syllabus in history, I'm doing European history. When I want to do Caribbean history, and I was always a fan of Caribbean history, and unfortunately there was no CAPE at the time, so you could only do it at O-levels and then you had to stop. So it is an indigenous exercise that helps us to develop our own sense of who we are in terms of the Caribbean, and CXC's role is there. My challenge with this is that I do not believe that CXC has properly understood the extent to which it needs to be democratized and it needs to respond to challenges and concerns that have been raised. Similar issues have been raised in the United Kingdom, as you have quite rightly said, because there have been some problems in terms of how you aggregate the grades and performance of students in situations where they have to be tested in a way that was not possible during COVID. So how do you deal with that? You have an alternative mechanism. And the mechanism that they use in the United Kingdom, as I understand it, is one where they had to end up taking grades from teachers in the school, because otherwise it was putting children at a disadvantage because you could not complete the exams in the way you normally would have. Now, my sense is that they can do that. We can do something similar. And I have a difficulty when I hear we need to have this high-level group, and this high-level group comes together and says the best that they can do is to review students on the same principles on which were established, while what we need is a fundamental root and branch review of the principles themselves and ask if they were the correct principles to hold to. So I'm with you on that entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The other point about the family is, I'm sorry, go right ahead, ma'am.
No, I just want to continue on the whole question of the issue that you raised about CXC and democratization. And that is a challenge that a lot of our indigenous institutions are experiencing. How do we democratize and put the people that we're supposed to represent at the center and stop this immediate, I am right, what's wrong with you? But to say, okay, yeah, we have a problem has been raised, let us see how best we can work it out and have across the board representation. Did they have asked for representation from student bodies? Did they ask for representation from parents? Yeah. Did they ask for representation from independent educators or whatever the case may be? Mm-hmm. But I think that this probably speaks to some of the problems that CXC was having before in terms of how to correct SBAs, who to pay, who not to pay, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think COVID, it has done in a lot of arenas, has exacerbated a problem that is coming to life. And this is a golden opportunity for us to say, hey, wait, let us just check ourselves to move forward in a very positive way. No, Sam, I don't want to talk too much. Yeah.
You're making solid points. And I think that an organization, an entity that gives way to the kind of review that you're talking about is an organization that we're going to get stronger. When you subject CXC to the kind of rigor that you're seeing, where the stakeholders sit together and say, well, let's look at a process and understand what is wrong with a process, because clearly we have a problem. You can only get stronger as a result. And I agree with you that it's unfortunate that we went down this road of saying somebody right, somebody wrong, and we're moving in. That's not the way to grow. So I am with you 150% in that regard, ma'am.
I think
it's an opportunity miss. Right. No, the other point you were making about the family is I think it's critical. I believe that in many ways our family structures are better than a lot of others. And one of the things, I did a research project many years ago for National Council on Substance Abuse. And we asked people, these were at-risk youth. We asked them, who do you live with? We got over 100 combinations and permutations regarding the people that they live with, ranging from a friend, best friend's mother, brother, sister, and nobody else, one parent, sometimes an auntie and uncle. The point that I am making is that presented data for me.
Yeah.
Precisely. Precisely. It demonstrated to me that we have in Barbados an extremely broad range of different family structures. So this idea of saying that there's only one way to do it is absolute and total rubbish, because it works. And you know, sometimes it takes a village to raise a family. I have seen situations in which you have a parental structure that is broad with aunties and uncles. Some of them are not even related to the child in the first instance, a godmother or a godfather, and that's how it works. But it works well. And that's, you know, that's the important thing. Culturally, I think that we have to grow to respect that more. And I remember years ago, I attended a christening, a baptism for a kid. I was asked to step in as the godfather to just be there for that child on that occasion, because the godfather who was there, I was deputizing for him, he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I remember we took the child up for christening, and the priest who is no longer with us, man, he laid into those women, because it was a set of women and none of them had men there with them. None. It was about five of them being baptized. And all the children had godfathers, but none of them had fathers there. And he said to them that this is ridiculous. He says that all of you all who are going to live with a man should try and find a husband and marry him, because it is not good for the children. And he went on and on ranting. I think that's probably one of the reasons why I started having nothing to do with the church, because it was foul and offensive. And my sense is that there has to be, and I think the church has played a leading role in this regard, where you are disparaging familial structures that are clearly part of who we are. And that's what the family law did. The family law recognized the fact that there are some people who are born into wedlock. And this whole idea about people having two families, I mean, that's a reality of Barbados, where you have a man that has two different families in two different situations. So what, you're going to keep outside children and inside children differently? No. It is what it is.
It is what it is. And the thing is, and I'm very strong on valuing what we have. That circumstance that you speak to in terms of the church, that priest not wants it. He says, wait, where's the biological father? But there's lots of daddies here. Daddies, uncles, whatever you see.
There you go.
So he refused to see the bond and the strength in that. And likewise, what we then do is internalize that, and that's part of a reality that is not our reality. And that is where I find that a lot of confusion. And Peter, if you may permit me to speak a little longer, I just want to move from here now to the whole question of how we looking at the crime in the country and linking it to, you know, there's some good contributions that are coming in, but every contribution is just about one part of the whole. And I don't claim to have the whole, but what I would like to speak to in terms of when we do is how, quote unquote, the people that are, I can use the word privileged loosely here, that are privileged, meaning not in violent situations, not in criminality, how do we embrace the people that are involved and not just be condemning? And I'm saying that in this context, that once we continue to be just
condemned. Ma'am, we have to take a break. I want to let you continue and finish your point. Remember, we're on 434-1790. I was having a very interesting conversation with a lady just now. Unfortunately, we got called away to a series of advertisements, and now Dennis tells me that she has gone. So, ma'am, I do hope that at some point in time, either this week or in the future when I'm on the air, you will call back and you will finish, because you were making some fairly substantial points, and I was anxious to hear your take on the issue of crime. While you're at it, just let me say that I too have some opinions on crime, and I was hoping to hear your take, because I suspected that you were going the direction of looking at, one, the role of the family in supporting people away from a life of crime, but more importantly, the role of the system that ensures that persons have opportunities. And I think that that is one of the points that we can never forget. When we see a criminal, it is always easy to isolate it and say that that person is a bad person, without understanding that we can perhaps prevent persons like that from going in that direction if we provide adequate opportunities for those persons to engage themselves, engage their minds, and so on. And that's something that the criminologists have been saying over and over and over again. So hopefully, ma'am, we'll be able to touch base soon. I enjoy speaking to you. I'm sorry that the conversation got cut short.